year, because the date of Yom HaAtzmaut, when the Declaration of Independence was declared in Israel, that was on the 5th of Iyar. The 5th of Iyar is actually this coming Shabbos. This past day was the 3rd of Iyar. Tonight is the 4th of Iyar. And the reason why we don't observe it on the date is soon after the establishment of the state, already in the 1950s, when either Yom HaAtzmaut fell out on Shabbos itself, or if either Yom HaZikaron was directly came after Shabbos, or if Yom HaAtzmaut would go into Shabbos. So at the request of the chief rabbi, in order to avoid the Shabbos violations that may be inevitable with the celebrations and with the programs for Yom HaZikaron, so the Rabbanut and the government worked out so that Yom HaAtzmaut and Yom HaZikaron wouldn't go into Shabbos, and that's why we observed Yom HaZikaron yesterday and Yom HaAtzmaut this past day. But really, it's still very appropriate to have a shiur for Yom HaAtzmaut, considering that actually the Yom HaAtzmaut, the day when of the when in Israel's independence was declared, is actually coming up on Shabbos tomorrow. So the question of the shiur is, may we establish new holidays? And when it comes to Yom HaAtzmaut, this is often a sensitive topic, a sensitive question, and sometimes a source of tension. And I remember a story I heard several years ago from Rabbi Zev Leff. Rabbi Leff is now the rabbi of a Moshav Matityahu in Israel. And he says that before he came to Israel, he was the rabbi of a shul in Miami. And in that shul was a diverse population. And is it in the main shul? So for Yom HaAtzmaut, they didn't change anything in the davening. They said Takanu, they didn't say Hallel. But there was a B'nai Akiva group that met in the shul. So they wanted to have a minyan where they wouldn't say Takanu, where they would say Hallel. So Rabbi Leff said, no problem. They could have a separate minyan. He requested they did not say it with a bracha. We can speak more about that. And so Rabbi Leff said, for about 7 or 8 years, this arrangement worked very well. There was one minyan that didn't change the davening for Yom HaAtzmaut, one minyan that adjusted the davening for Yom HaAtzmaut, and for the most part, everyone got along. Until 1 year, Rabbi Lev says that for whatever reason, he overslept. It's something that really never happened before, but he overslept, and on Yom HaAtzmaut, and he came to shul late, and he sees an outside of the shul. He said there were two doctors. One from the Hallel Minyan, one from the not Hallel Minyan, and they're fighting with each other. And surrounded them are people who are basically, cheering for either side. And apparently, what happened was one of them was trying to help recruit some others for the Minyan, and it became a source of tension. And hopefully, it doesn't get to that extent. But because of the ideological issues involved, because there are different approaches within the Torah community about this, and people feel very strongly about this important issue, oftentimes it can unfortunately lead to tension. But even within, and this is what I wanted to discuss, even within the approach that the state of Israel is a very positive thing, is something that we should thank Hashem, something we should thank Hashem for. And recognize in some way, there's still not necessarily a unanimous agreement about how that should be done. How should it be marked? Should we have some kind of, should we mark it as a holiday? And then, of course, the question, which I'll hopefully explore as well, is the question of Hallel, the question of specifics. And hopefully through this, we can, understand that without focusing so much on some of the other questions related to Zionism and the State of Israel, God willing, in our time together, we can explore that topic independently. But again, within the community of those who view the State of Israel as a positive thing, want to explore the question of what's involved with establishing a new holiday. Is it so simple? Is it so recommended? And then specifically, what about saying Hallel? As I say, I was now made the host, so I'll also share the screen. Okay, so now the question is, can we establish new holidays? So seemingly this would be a problem because the Torah says in a couple of places, but in Sefer Devarim, I have in source one, the Torah says, "Es kol davar asher anochi mitzaveschem, of everything that I command you, osot tishmeru lasos, that you shall observe to do, lo sos eva lo velo sigra mimenu, you shall not add to it, and you shall not subtract from it." So it seems like we have the Torah. The Torah gives us a holiday, gives us Pesach, Sukkot, Shavuos. Okay, what gives us the right to add any other holidays? But in our calendar, do we have any other holidays besides those that are mentioned in the Torah? I think you can think of at least two, not even including Yom HaTzimut. What are those two?
Hanukkah.
Purim.
Chanukah and Purim. Right, we said there's some differences of approach in Yom HaTzimut, but as far as I know, all Jews celebrate Hanukkah and all Jews celebrate Purim. So, how are we allowed to do that? It's not one of those, are not one of the 613 mitzvot, so the festivals that are mentioned in the Torah, not only for those holidays as well. We have other mitzvot that are mandated on those holidays. On Hanukkah, we have Hallel and Hanukkah candles and Purim Mishloach Manos, the reading of the Megillah, etc. So, what gives us the right to do it? So, the Gemara in Megillah, in source number two, asks that question. It says, the Gemara leading up to it said, we had 48 prophets and seven prophetesses, and all of them didn't think to add even one letter to the Torah. And here we're coming along and saying that we should have the reading of the Megillah. So, the Gemara asks, what gives us a right to do that? My darush, source number two. Amar b'chiyah bar Avin, Amar b'Yishuv ben Karcha. Chiyah bar Avin traded the name of Yishuv ben Karcha. The Gemara presents what's called a kal v'chomer, an analogy that if something is true in one case, it's certainly the true in another case. So he says, Uma me'adus l'cheirus amrinan shira. If we sang shira, if we sang out praises to God when we were released from slavery to freedom, from death to life, and this is speaking about Purim, when we were all condemned to death and then we were saved, so all the more so we should recognize it and we should mark it and we should respond to it. And this really is the precedent for, we'll see, for Hanukkah, but for other days that were observed in response to some sort of miracle, say, that happened. The Ritva in source number three says this is the model that the rabbis patterned Hanukkah and other festivals are up. Rabbanan d'tikun basar hachi ner Hanukkah. It was after this that they, based on this, that the rabbis enacted the mitzvah of ner Hanukkah. And while now we, on our calendar, so not even considering, Yom HaTzimut, Yom Yerushalayim, but we basically have two main holidays that are not mentioned in the Torah, Chanukah and Purim. But actually, in the time of the, at least in the Second Temple period, so there are many more days. And they're thinking if you're making the Beis Shalom congregation calendar, Beis Shalom Academy calendar, we would actually have to put more days on the calendar because there was a little booklet called Megillas Tainis. Megillas Tainis was a collection of days, and you can actually find it online, month by month, different days that on which it was forbidden to fast or to give eulogies. And it was forbidden to do those things on those days because they marked some sort of salvation that happened. And most of those things related to political situations in the time of the Second Temple. One of them is that there was some sentries placed around in the land of Israel, and basically then one day they left. Other things like that, things that days on which the Jewish people or even communities within the Jewish people experienced some sort of salvation, some sort of relief. So then they enacted that actually the entire Jewish people were not allowed to fast on those days, to fast voluntarily on those days, and were not allowed to give eulogies. And the Gemara says that after the destruction of the temple, it says Butla Megillas Tainis, that now the festivals that are mentioned in Megillas Tainis are no longer observed. And really mostly because they had to do with the situation there, they're not so relevant. The only two that are left are Hanukkah and Purim. But then there's a question. When we don't have those other days, so now, based on our circumstances, can we devote days to commemorate? If some sort of miracle, some sort of salvation happened, can we or must we devote a day to that? So the Chasam Sofer, in source number 4, says that what's the Gemara in Megillah telling us about that if we were relieved from Avdus L'Chairus, from slavery to freedom, all the more so from death to life? So that's not just saying Chanukah and Purim. That's telling us that we have a mitzvah from the Torah to do this any time that we're saved from a dangerous situation or a precarious situation, and we're delivered from that. Chasam Sofer says in source number 4, Mashikos de Purim b'Chanukah v'kol yimei Megillas Tainis Lasso Zecher L'Neis Mimavas L'Chaim. That all those Chanukah and Purim and all those days that were mentioned in this Megillas Tainis to commemorate a miracle, who deraisa mamish? This is actually, he says, this is literally a Torah commandment to do this. Mikavachomer, these are parakama de Megillah, from this Kavachomer that we learned in Megillah. And so he says that doing something in and of itself is actually a mitzvah from the Torah to do. He says, however, the manner in which we're supposed to do this is somewhat subject to interpretation. He says that the mitzvah from the Torah is to do some sort, something to remember the miracle. But the amount and what exactly you do is up for the rabbis to decide. He says, meaning the rabbis decided, okay, in Chanukah you have Hadlachos Neros, lighting the Chanukah candles, and Purim you have Megillah Mishloach Manos. Okay, each situation you have to determine what the appropriate way to commemorate it is. But the requirement, the basic requirement to do something to commemorate a miracle, the Chasam Sofer says that is actually a requirement from the Torah. Not only is it allowed, may we establish new holidays? It sounds like if under certain circumstances, we're required from the Torah to establish new holidays. And you look at some of the responsa literature throughout the last couple hundred years, there's evidence that at least different communities had their either one or even several days that they didn't say Tachanun, and they didn't fast or say eulogies because they were delivered from some sort of trouble. And one of the main sources that this is a practice that not only is condoned and encouraged, but it's in fact binding, is a responsa of the Maharam Alashgar, who lived in 16th century Egypt, and then in Yerushalayim. It's quoted in source number 5. So he says, you call him B'nei Ha'ir L'Takim V'Askamos Aleim V'Elzarama Vay Machreim Adolam Lassos Purim Yom Shenase Bahem Nes. So the residents of a city may agree to accept upon themselves, not only upon themselves, but upon their descendants for all time, to make a kind of Purim on the day that a miracle happened to them. And he says, V'Av Sheholkin L'Racheres L'Ishtaka Achal Aleim. And even if they, and some examples were this, let's say they it's a Purim of Frankfurt. So let's say you live in Frankfurt, but you moved somewhere else. So according to the Maharam Alashgar, you would say you still have to observe that day. Then that day, you can fast or say eulogies, because in order to mark and commemorate a day in which at least your ancestors or the community in which you lived experienced some sort of deliverance. However, this was not entirely agreed upon. The Pre-Chadash, also the 16th century, says that no, when we say that Megillah's Tainus is Nova's canceled, so that means that in general, the aftermath of the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, so we don't have this concept of just making new holidays. And he says, source number six, he's done the Kaimalon, the Batal Megillus Tainus, the Kaimalon, the Kamai Batal, the Leislan Lasufe, Akron Yasa. That it be that because the festival, the festivals that were mentioned in Megillus Tainus are now nullified, so we don't have to observe them, and we also don't add any new days like this. And while some authorities do cite this opinion, it seems evident from other authorities in the last couple hundred years that this opinion, this restriction, was generally not followed. That there's evidence of, again, many communities marking days to commemorate certain miraculous occurrences. And the Chasam Sofer in source number 7 responds to this argument of the Pri Chadash that we can't add any festive days. So he says, no, it's not the case that we're not allowed to add any festive days. We saw above that he says it's even a Torah commandment. What are we restricted to once we say this Megillus Tainus was canceled, all those older festivals were canceled? He says you can't make a festive day. The only restriction is to make festive days that are extended to the entire Jewish people. And we'll have to keep this in mind when we get to the question of Yom HaTzimut. But at least what's clear from the Chasam Sofer is that you can establish festive days. He says Val Ir Achas, Medina Achas, one city or one country can themselves establish a day, he says, Bli Pipuk, without a doubt. For sure that's allowed, and for sure that may even be required. But the difference is that some of the festive days that were observed in the times of the Second Temple, Megillus Tainus, so they didn't necessarily involve all of the Jewish people, but because they were significant enough, they were observed by all of the Jewish people. The Chasam Sofer is saying nowadays, if you have something that happens to a community, so the community can mark it, but you can't then say, well, you know, let's say they have this Purim of Frankfurt. So you can't say, you know, Jews in Warsaw have to, you know, not fast or say eulogies or do something else on that day. That it's more local. Perhaps we can extrapolate from here, and we'll address this question more closely. Well, what if something happens to the entire Jewish people? Then can you make a festival for the entire Jewish people? But it seems to at least be not unanimously agreed upon. You have the Pri Chadash, but generally it seems to have been accepted that individual communities can and should mark days of salvation in some way. And a often cited example of this is the Chai Adam. Chai Adam lived in Lithuania in the 19th century, and he says that it reiterates this idea that whoever had a miracle occur for them can make that day into a Purim, and then they have a festive meal, and it's considered a Seudas Mitzvah. You know, so let's say, for example, this actually has halakhic implications. Let's say on the 13th of Nisan, there was some sort of miracle that met this requirement. So he says there's a Seudas Mitzvah on the 13th of Nisan, so the day before Pesach, so let's say you were Bechor. So maybe you don't need to go to a Siyum. You can go to a festive meal if the community had a type of salvation like this. So he says we're talking about holidays. We're talking about things that have some halakhic significance. So he says, for sure, an individual community can do that. And he says he and his family and his descendants have on the 15th of Kislev make a day of celebration, because he tells of a story that there was a fire that broke out in his neighborhood and other people were killed. And even though the people in his house were injured, all of them survived, and he considered it was a great miracle. So he accepted upon himself and upon his descendants that on that date, he says they should do certain things. They should light candles, like on Yom Tov, sing the Shira Yichud, recite some Tehillim. They should make a day to mark that salvation, that day when they were killed, when they were saved from a dangerous situation. So now we get to the first part of establishing the general idea of establishing holidays. So seems like there are a couple of criteria. One, it may in fact be a Torah commandment to do that. But what are the conditions? So what we've seen is that a nace, people use the word, the different sources we've seen use the word nace, some sort of miracle. It's a little bit undefined, but something happens. There's a salvation from danger to safety. And actually I pointed out above, the Chasam Sofer says that really nowadays, these celebrations are really more in response from Misa L'chaim, from death to life, than from Abdus L'chairis. He says, really, when we're in Golos, when we're in exile, so Abdus L'chairis, from slavery to freedom, isn't necessarily possible. And we'll see how that is applied to the situation in Israel. But it seems to be that most agree that it's not only allowed, maybe even required, to have a festive day when some sort of miracle happened, probably rescue from death. And what seems to also be, so the exception of the pre-chadash seems to be agreed upon, is at least for an individual or for a family or community, that these celebrations, again, are not only permitted, but are encouraged. So we'll have to keep those things in mind when we get to Yom HaTzmut, the miracle aspect or the rescue from death, and also keep in mind how do we factor in the entire community? Would we only allow something like that for the individuals who are in Israel at the time, or the individuals who are in a situation where they were in the face of some sort of danger and were saved, or might we be able to apply it to make it into a national holiday? By the way, and if at any point anyone wants to, I know that people are muted, but anyone wants to unmute and join in, absolutely encouraged to do that. So this was the first part of the question of, can we create new holidays? So in principle, we can. And although it seems like now we are limited, at least that we establish a day to be observed by the people themselves who experience the salvation, and arguably not beyond that. So if, you know, God forbid I was in danger and then saved, so maybe I could have a personal Yom Tov, but couldn't necessarily say that everyone else has to do it and may not even be allowed to. So that's part number one. Then we'll come back to that and take a look through the context of Yom HaTzmut. So now what about Hallel? Right? We're talking about the general day. Okay, the general day, people, you put it on your calendar, you don't. But Hallel is, as the story from Rabbi Leff indicates, in a more extreme way, but even in a less extreme way. Sometimes the question about Hallel on Yom HaTzmut is a big question. Right, some places say Hallel, some places say Hallel in this regular place with a bracha, without a bracha, after davening, full Hallel, half Hallel. So what are no Hallel? So what are all of these? What's the basis for all these practices? And what are some questions we have to consider when discussing Hallel on Yom HaTzmut, or Hallel in general for that matter? So, well, you'd ask me, you know, what's the big deal? You know, say Hallel, don't say Hallel. You know, Hallel is very nice, right? It's one of the highlights of davening. You know, if it were up to me, we'd say, you know, Hallel on more days. So not so simple. The Gemara in Shabbos in source number 9, first it sounds like you gotta say Hallel every day. Wonderful. My portion should be like with those who say Hallel every day. That's great. It sounds like so. It sounds like saying Hallel every day is what we should strive for. The Gemara says, wait a second. Eini, is that so? Amar Mar, Hakora Hallel b'chol yom, harezem b'charefu megadeh. That someone who says Hallel every day is like one who curses and blasphemes. It's very harsh terminology. And the explanation for this is because while we know that Hashem controls everything. And there's no, from the perspective of Hashem, there's no really major difference between the miraculous and the natural. However, at least the way we experience things is there are certain events that are miraculous. And when those type of events happen, so it's considered appropriate to respond in a certain way. And Hallel is considered the appropriate way to respond. If you think about the different words in Hallel, it talks about miraculous things. That's the context that we're supposed to say Hallel. Even though, again, everything is from Hashem, there are certain things that at least we experience as miraculous that are extraordinary. And it's fitting to say Hallel on those occasions. But the implication is if we just say Hallel every day, if we just say Hallel like it's no big deal and take it lightly, so then we would not recognize those occasions where it's really appropriate to say Hallel. We wouldn't appreciate the significance of what we're doing. So we're told that someone who just says Hallel every day is this harsh language of Mekarev u'Megadev. They want like one who curses and blasphemes. Okay, so what do we do with Rabbi Yossi's statement that I want my portion should be with those who say Hallel every day? So ki kamrinan b'psuke de zimra. So you're not out of luck. You want to say a type of Hallel every day. So p'suke de zimra. That's a form of praise of Hashem. It's something we do every day. So Rabbi Yossi's saying my portion should be with those who say p'suke de zimra every day. And you know, sometimes the schedule is tight and the p'suke de zimra has to be rushed. So Shulchan Aruch says that, you know, we should say Psuke de Zimra like we're counting treasures. Psuke de Zimra is, especially if we're able to pay attention to the words, a very, very beautiful thing. So it says my portion should be like those who say Psuke de Zimra every day. That's appropriate to say every day. But Hallel has to be reserved for certain occasions where it's appropriate, certain extraordinary occasions where there were miraculous events. Okay, so if I had this Gemara, so what might I say if, let's say I'm not sure about Yom Ha'atzmaut, or I'm not sure on a day, should I say Hallel, should I not say Hallel? So maybe I'll say, okay, I'll just sit it out, right? I don't want to be Mechare from the God, I'll say Psuke de Zimra. I do that every day, but you know, saying Hallel is a big deal. Maybe I'll just sit it out. Maybe I won't say it, but not so fast. The Gemara in Sanhedrin notes that in about when the prophet Yeshayahu, Isaiah, speaks about Chizkiyahu, and he's speaking in glowing terms. In one place, he says lamarbe, that he in increase, but the marbe, the mem, is written close. It's written like a mem sofit. It's the only place in Tanakh that it's written. It's the second letter in the word, but it's written close. If you look in a Tanakh or you look in a scroll, it's written like the mem at the end of the word. So the Gemara asks, why in this verse that's laudatory towards Chizkiyahu, why is it written close? So just a little bit of background. Chizkiyahu was king of Yehuda and Eretz Yisrael, and he really turned the king, the nation around. In Tanakh, in Malachim, it says that there were in all of Israel, there wasn't even a child who didn't know the complex laws of purity and impurity. He started a revolution. He got rid of idolatry, and the Gemara tells us that he was so righteous and his accomplishments were so impressive that Hashem was going to designate him to be Mashiach. And what was going to lead up to this designation as Mashiach? So there was a war with Assyria, with Sennacherib. They were the enemies of the Jews. So there was a battle that was about to take place. It was about to take place the next morning. And there were over 100,000, close to 200,000 troops of Sennacherib, of Assyrians, ready to attack. And Hashem made a miracle that 185,000 of them, instead of going to war, 185,000 of the Assyrians just caught a plague and dropped dead. And they didn't need to go to war. And that could have been the war of Gog and Magog, the war that we're told will precede the coming of Mashiach. We don't know exactly what it's going to be like. So apparently that could have been the war of Gog and Magog, where we didn't even need to lose any life. And Hashem made a miracle that the enemies just fell miraculously. And then Chizkiyahu would have been Mashiach. Sounds great, right? A couple thousand years ago, we would have had Mashiach. It was all ready to go. Well, what happened? Mar Sanhedrin says, source number 10, Amar Midas Adin Livnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the attribute of justice said before Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam. Umay David HaMelech Yisrael Sh'amar Kama Shir Sisi Shvakos Lefanecha Lo Asiso Mashiach. If David HaMelech, who said, wrote the book of Tehillim, who said so many praises before you, you didn't make him Mashiach, Chizkiya Sh'nase Lo HaNisim Halalu B'lo Mar Shir Lefanecha Zeyu Mashiach. Chizkiya, who you performed this great miracle for, and he didn't sing Shira. He didn't sing your praises. You're going to make him a Mashiach? The Gemara says, L'kachni statim, and that's why the mem was written closed. And the Gemara then continues that then the angels went to besiege. We'll sing Shira. We'll sing out praises for you. No, it was already too late. Hiskiyahu, who was so righteous, who was ready, he was designated to be Mashiach. Why? He lost it all because something that was miraculous happened, something that was extraordinary happened, and he didn't acknowledge it in a sufficient way. He's probably thankful, maybe said Baruch Hashem, but he didn't sing Shira. Presumably sing Shira, saying Hallel. He didn't say Hallel. So we see it's saying Hallel one way or the other. It's not so simple. You say Hallel when it's not required or not appropriate. So Mar says you're Mecharif Megadeh. It's like one who curses or blasphemes. But there's a situation that warrants Hallel, and you fail to say it. So look what happened with Chizkiyahu. So, and this question is it's not so simple to just sit it out, because there are implications for saying Hallel when it's not appropriate, but there are also implications for failing to say Hallel when it is appropriate. So we saw that apparently that there are situations that call for Hallel, and the Gemara in Pesachim, in source number 11, says this. It says that the prophets instituted Nevi'im Tikra Lahem L'Yisrael, Shehayu Omrim Oso Akol Perek Perek, that they should say Hallel on and every time, Akol Tzara V'Tzara Shelo Tavo Lehen Shenigolin Omrim Oso Agulasan. That in every time, we'll have to see what every time means, but every time that trouble comes upon them and they're saved, so they should recite Hallel. So you see, so how do we determine what those types of situations are? So what's the story with days of saying Hallel or adding Hallel? The Gemara in Erchin in source number 12 said that there are 18 days a year, and in Chutz Lara it's 21 days a year, where the sages institute that we say Hallel. Shmona Yimei Achag, the 8 days of Sukkot, Shmona Yimei Chanukah, 8 days of Chanukah, Yom Tov Rishon Shel Pesach, the first day of Pesach in Eretz Yisrael, Yom Tov Shel Atzeres, and Shavuos. And just to know, Rosh Chodesh and the last days of Pesach are not on this list. Those were actually, we just say, as a matter of custom. There's a question whether you say a bracha, Ashkenazim do, Sephardim generally don't. And also on those days, we don't say the entire Hallel. On the days that aren't in this list, we say on Rosh Chodesh, in the last 6 days of Pesach, we say half Hallel. And so we'll see what the significance of that is. But they're told there are 18 days that 21 in Chutz Lara'etz that we're required to say Hallel. Right? Everyone agrees we say Hallel. But what about this idea of adding Hallel? What about what we saw in Pesachim in number 11, that the prophets instituted that at every point where we experience salvation, we should say Hallel. So what's the criteria? So there are several opinions on this, but Tosfos in Sukkah gives a qualification that's going to be important when we look again more closely at the question of Yom HaTzmaut. The Tosfos says, He notes that in the Gemara in Erchin in number 12, that says on these 18 days, a yachid, an individual, should say Hallel. So it sounds like an individual doesn't have license to add Hallel for something, for a miracle that happened to that individual beyond those days. It says, L'kak nachat yachid. That's why it says yachid, an individual. Tehileka kol Yisrael. That's because it's not because a miracle didn't happen to when it says that we say Hallel and every time that we experience salvation, that's only if it happens to all of Jews. See, like Kol Yisrael Ein Gomrim Oso Ella the Eloha Yamim. That if a miracle didn't happen to the entire Jewish people, so then you only say it on those 18 days. Aval Geulas Kol Yisrael Gomrim Oso LaOlam. But on a redemption that involved the entire Jewish people, so then you say it, then you do it, Hallel. That falls into the criteria that says the prophets instituted that you add Hallel on those days. If the entire nation experiences a salvation. And the Rebbeinu Hananel adds that, well, Lo Yaskil, that's with a bracha. So maybe an individual might say Hallel without a bracha, but if you want to add a time to say Hallel with a bracha, so it has to be a miracle that the salvation that involves the entire nation. The Meiri says that either that an individual, similar to Rebbeinu Hananel, that an individual can decide to recite Hallel on a day that they were saved from some sort of danger, but without a bracha. And he says that would be the same for a community. So the Miri would say that really we can add days where he'd say Hallel with a bracha. And now, what sort of miracle, what sort of event are we talking about, right? The Gemara is a little bit vague when it said, the Gemara had said, Sarah, that it said that the prophets had instituted that the Jewish, that called Perek Mekarek, but called Sarah Vitzara, that when they're relieved from some sort of troubles, they'd say Hallel. So, you know, we don't say Hallel on every type of occasion. So what's the qualification? So the Maritz Chiyuz says that he adds a qualification that may make it a little bit difficult. He says that he's commenting on the Gemara that speaks about Chanukah. The Gemara in Shabbos that speaks about Chanukah emphasizes the miracle of the oil. So the Maritz Chiyuz says that we see that we, at least he says that the challah that we see on Chanukah was instituted because of the miracle of the oil, not necessarily the other miracles of the battle. We'll get to see the Rambam who says differently. So he says that we only say Hallel Rak al, in source number 15, Rak al anesh hayotzi migeder hateva. Ein omrim Hallel al nisim nistarim. So we only say Hallel on a miracle that leaves the confines of nature, like the oil lasting for 8 days, but not nisim nistarim, not hidden miracles. And there's the last point about Hallel. So now the question is, we don't say Hallel on Purim. Right, Purim was the paradigm of the day that we said we have to, when we're talking about instituting new festivals, so the paradigm was Purim. So we don't say Hallel on Purim. And there are three explanations the Gemara gives. One, that we don't say after leaving Egypt, we don't say Hallel on miracles that occur outside of Eretz Israel. So now we're thinking in the, starting to get to Yom HaTzmaut. Okay, so that's pretty easy. That occurred in Eretz Israel. Rav Nachman says that we read the Megillah in place of Hallel, a kriyasa zu halacha, that the reading of the Megillah is like Hallel. It's actually interesting. Some posts actually discuss, well, what if you're in a place with no Megillah? Should you say Hallel instead? That's a discussion that comes out of that. And Rava says that we don't recite Hallel on Purim because what do we say in Hallel? Hallelu abdei Hashem, right? So we say Hallelu abdei Hashem. We're servants of Hashem. Velo abdei Achashverosh. Akasi abdei Achashverosh anan. That even when the Purim story ended, right, we were still subject of Achashverosh. And we saw we were relieved from the terrible decree, but we're still subject of Achashverosh. We didn't have freedom. You know, the Megillah ends with us with him levying a tax. We weren't free people. So maybe in that case, when there's not a final redemption, or there's not, or it's considered not necessarily full servants of Hashem, we're servants to subjugated to someone or something else, then maybe we can't say Hallel. And if you look at the Rambam seems to not agree with the approach that Hallel is only said over supernatural types of things. Again, you could read it I mean, you could read it to be consistent, but arguably not. And also maybe shed some light on, well, what do we consider a situation where we're no longer subjugated to someone or something else? So look at the Rambam in Hilchos Megillah Chanukah, number 17. So he tells how the Jews suffered great difficulties from the Greeks and they oppressed them. And then, until the God of our fathers saved them, and the sons of the Hashmonaim, the Asmoneans, overcame them and slew them and saved us. They talked about the victory of battle. And then what does he say? The Chazra Malchus Yisrael, Yisrael Masayim Shana Ada Chorban Hasheni. And what's the other? The Rambam doesn't just add words for nothing. What's another essential part of the miracle of Chanukah for which we establish the observance of Chanukah candles, but also of Hallel? The fact that Jewish sovereignty returned to Eretz Yisrael. Now, let's just think for a second. What kind of sovereignty are we talking about? Said that the Hashmonaim, the Asmoneans, they assumed the kingship, and that lasted about 200 years. But what do we know about the 200 years afterwards? Were the Hashmonaim, were they so good long term? So from what we know, they were, from the records that we have, both from the Gemara and Josephus as well, they were terrible. They became extremely corrupt. The Ramban says that they really was inappropriate for them to hold on to the kingship because the kingship was designated for Yehuda, and the Hashmonaim and Asmoneans were Kohanim. So maybe they should have taken it as a temporary measure just to get things back up and running, but they shouldn't have held on to it. But they held on to it, and they were incredibly corrupt. They were the office of the Kohen, of the Kohen Gadol, could be bought. And the Gemara says that if anyone tells you by the time of the destruction of the close to the destruction of the second base of Mikdash, says the Gemara says if anyone tells you they're from the Hashmonaim, that they're a slave. I mean, they intermingled. Herod was really the last one of them. It was not exactly the optimal situation, both religiously and as far as stability. But no, the Rambam still includes the fact that there was a Jewish sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael for 200 years. He still includes that among those things that we celebrate in Chanukah. So both from the perspective of the quality of the sovereignty and from the stability, so this example of the Hashmonaim may mitigate the question with regard to the current state of Israel and Yom HaTzimut. So when we now get to Yom HaTzimut, so for saying Hallel, okay, so first for establishing a holiday, so it needs to be a salvation from either a subjugation to freedom or maybe according to Hasim Sofer, only from death to life. And we know from there that if it doesn't involve the entire community, then it can only be, this observance can only be by individuals. Perhaps if it doesn't involve the entire community, it can be a more widely observed festival. And with regard to Hallel, so it seems like if we want to say Hallel with a bracha, let's just say we want to say full Hallel with a bracha. So what it will emerge from what we've seen, I know we've seen a lot, are you can need about four conditions. One, all the Jewish people, or Kol Yisrael, let's say all of Israel, in Eretz Yisrael, not still subjugated, at least in the sense of Purim, that we're still servants of Achashverosh. And the three and a half, perhaps supernatural. There's a question whether it may have to be supernatural. But let's say at least the three. All of the Jewish people, in order to really satisfy all the opinions that we've seen, all the Jewish people are not still subjugated and in Eretz Yisrael. So now let's get to Yom Ha'atzmaut. With what happened on Yom Ha'atzmaut? Because one of the things that we're going to have to determine is there's Yom Ha'atzmaut the day. There's the 5th of Iyar the day. That was the day that that Israel declared its independence. And then there's the broader future of the state of Israel after that, with its ups and downs. Note that right after Israel's independence was declared, so the war broke out for about 10 months, the War of Independence. Because what was happening up until this point is the British, who had been occupying the land of Israel since during World War I, had given their permission with the Balfour Declaration in 1917 to eventually, in the vague terms, to establish a Jewish state in Palestine, as they termed it. But in the intervening years, they severely limited immigration, they had the white papers, and the British were now overall didn't make it so pleasant for the Jews, both in the land of Israel and those trying to immigrate. But then in November of 1947, the UN made the partition plan, where they would divide up the land of Israel between the Jewish population and the Arab population. And then it would be on May 15th, 1948, which actually the 6th of Iyar, then the British would leave. But the Arabs basically said that, okay, when the British, you declare a state and the British leave, we're all going to attack you. So that was what the Jewish, in the days leading up to the 5th of Iyar or May 14th, 15th, 1948. So the Jewish people had to, the people in Israel had to really determine what to do. On one hand, there were a lot of refugees, the people in DP camps, there were refugees from Europe, there were refugees from other parts of the world who couldn't get into the land of Israel. They were stuck. They couldn't get back to Europe. There were even limitations on going to America, so they were stuck. And they were in places, you know, like Cyprus, they were there in DP camps. So they needed to do something, but the Arabs said that if they declared a state, so then they would immediately attack them. You know, the Arab League and the surrounding Arab nations. So what ended up happening on the 5th of Iyar? So a day before the British mandate was to end, when the British were to leave, with this threat of from the Arabs of attack, so those involved, led by Ben-Gurion, they wrote the Declaration of Independence and declared independence. It was actually supposed to be May 15th was a Saturday. There were some religious people who signed the Declaration of Independence, so they actually moved it up for Friday. They moved up to the 5th of Iyar, and they signed the Declaration of Independence, which officially allowed all of those Jews who were in the DP camps and elsewhere to come into Israel, but then the Arabs kept to their word and attacked. And then about 10 months later, Israel was victorious with some losses along the way. And then the subsequent events in the history of Israel, again, including the ups and downs. And unfortunately, as we noted yesterday, remembered yesterday, Yom HaZikaron, there were 23,000, almost 24,000 soldiers and victims of terror who've lost their lives in Israel. And the country hasn't always been stable. At the same time, there's political independence has given the Jewish people the opportunity to defend themselves. Israel has been a place where Jews anywhere in the world, you know, now because of health reasons, there are the limitations, but anywhere in the world can come to. And it also changed the situation of Jews internationally. You know, now the Soviet Union couldn't just do whatever they wanted. Israel was a powerful advocate for Jews in the world. Not only that, Israel has in Rumalamed in number 18 and Soloveitchik in Kol Dodi Dofek in a talk he gave on Yom HaTzmaut says how just with after World War II, many Jews were totally despondent and just wanted to assimilate, but the state of Israel gave them a pride, a connection to Judaism. Then we go to 1967. That's when the whole Baal Tshuva movement, this Chabad or Eish, that's when it took off. People saw the miraculous events. People saw that the Jewish people were in a strong situation in the world, and it enabled people to return to Torah. And in Israel, there are more people studying Torah than ever before, lower rate of intermarriage than anywhere else. I mean, the state of Israel, with its imperfections, and then of course there are, has been a tremendous resource for the Jews, both spiritually and physically. So, but when it comes to, let's say, the specific question of saying Hallel on the day that Israel declared independence. So I'll throw this question out there. What would you say? If we have the criteria that we set, that all of Klal Yisrael, let's say Hallel with a bracha, full Hallel with a bracha. So all of the Jewish people and not still subjugated, and then Eretz Yisrael. So, and as far as the holiday, the 5th of Iyar, on a day where there was a salvation from either death to life or from subjugation to freedom. So what do you think? On the 5th of Iyar, say Hallel or don't say Hallel? So Robert says no. Mm-hmm. Molly, I see you're...
We unmuted, yes. I don't know the answer, though.
Right, so it's not Hallel, a simple no answer.
Bracha. Hallel, no bracha.
You think Hallel, no bracha. So why do you say no bracha?
The middle road.
I don't know. Just to kind of like, I guess, cover yourself so that you're not, so you're like not doing the wrong thing by saying it.
Right. So if we just go with the, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
No, that's okay.
If we go by some of the criteria. So what makes it, because you sound like they're a little bit, maybe we're unsure about some of this. So we have
right.
All the Jewish people and not still subjugated.
Well, it's pretty hard to get all the Jewish people to say that too.
Right. To agree to it also.
Right. So I don't see how that could be, one of the criteria.
Right. So maybe we're lacking that. And that may make it more questionable with regard to saying Hallel.
Right.
Anyone think we have everything? Yeah. Whatever you say, there will be well. Some great Torah authority to support you.
Oh, yeah. What about Usher? What does Usher think?
Yeah, sure. Well, you don't have all the Jews at the same time. It's it happened in Israel, right? So that goes. I don't know.
Right. So it's not so simple. We see now that even if one acknowledges the, we'll see the first group is, we'll say the Hallel, no requirement to say Hallel and or say Hallel without a bracha. What's the basis for that? Meaning, you say, oh, it's, a cop out. Maybe you decide you're going to say Hallel or you're not going to say Hallel. So what is this? And as I mentioned at the beginning, we could look at responses from the Satmar Rebbe. You can look at, Neturei Karta. Obviously, the question about saying Hallel is a little bit less relevant. But within the broader, quote-unquote, camp that acknowledges the miraculous events of the founding of the state of Israel and the great bracha that the state of Israel is. So there are some who still maintain, based on some of the reservations we mentioned, that either Hallel, either no requirement to say Hallel, or in the first camp, maybe no requirement, maybe saying Hallel on the 5th of Iyar may not be appropriate. There's a long tshuva from Rav Avadya Yosef, and Rav Avadya Yosef, he was the leading Sephardi authority, passed away about 8 years ago. And every great Torah authority has a different style in their writing. Rav Avadya was known to get a photographic memory, and his tshuvos are very, very long. And basically, if you want to know about an issue, you want to know the pro, the anti, the his opinion, you could just go to his tshuvos and he quotes everything. So this is a little bit snippet of his, of a response of his about Halan Yom HaTzimut. And he quotes several different opinions. One opinion he quoted is Aruvadi Hadaya, those the Yaskil Avdi. He was a Sephardi rabbi in the time the state of Israel was declared. And he says that the establishment of the state of Israel is the Askalt de Geula, the beginning of the redemption. He says that it's a very, very grateful for Hashem's gift of helping us return to Eretz Israel. But he said that Halal should not be said on Yom HaTzimut. This is again quoting Rav Ovadia Hodaya. Rav Ovadia Yosef is quoting Rabbi Ovadia Hodaya. And he says that you shouldn't say Halal on Yom HaTzimut for a couple of reasons. One, we still have enemies around, right? Let alone from that original fifth of ER to the next day. But even now, even with all the victories, we still have enemies. There are plenty of people who don't like Israel, who would be very happy and ready to, God forbid, get rid of Israel. At least get rid of the Jews there. And he also says that no miracle per se happened on the fifth of ER itself. He said, on the contrary, the war intensified, and there were 10 months of fighting afterwards. So he was unsure about what would be the appropriate. He said that that the establishment of the state of Israel is a very good thing, but what date are you going to establish the holiday? Maybe it should be November 29th or the 16th of Kislev, where the UN made the partition plan. So he's unsure, or maybe the ceasefire the next year in 1949. So because of this, he says that you. He, as much as he valued the state of Israel, as in the pro-state of Israel camp, he didn't think that it warranted saying Hallel. I just bring this out to note that not everyone who either doesn't or is hesitant about saying Hallel is Naturei Karta. You have, so that's one opinion within that. But Rav Ovadia Yosef himself says he grapples with the different issues that we mentioned. And he says, on one hand, the state of Israel marks the Askalta de Geula, the beginning of the redemption. And he notes that the growth of Torah learning, of Torah observance, the ability of Jews around the world to come to Israel, to come to safety, he knows that that's a tremendous thing. And now Israel has become the center of Torah and the center of the Jewish people, but he says that it's not, this is the Askalta de Geula, it's the beginning of the Geula, but the redemption isn't complete, right? No one says we have the Geula Shlema. The redemption isn't complete. You still have not only people on all sides of the country wanting to destroy Israel, but even within Israel, He says you have, unfortunately, whether it's educational institutions that don't educate in the way of Torah. He says quite explicitly. He says pornography that's sold in Israel, non-kosher food that's sold in Israel. He says it's a tremendous brocha. There are tremendous benefits and gains to the state of Israel, but it's not. This is really based on the idea that the Gemara and Megillah said that we're still servants to Achashverosh. We're not, between our political and spiritual situation, we're not quite there. At the same time, he notes even more than Rav Hadaya, who he quoted, that there are, again, tremendous benefits and a tremendous amount to be grateful for what Israel has produced, and even the events of Israel's independence. So he says in this final analysis that because of his with the balance of his hesitations, but the recognition that we have to thank Hashem for the establishment of the state of Israel. So he says that because Mekevan she'ein kana el eskalta de gula, because it's only the beginning of redemption, ve'ein gula shleima l'kol am Yisrael, and not the full redemption of the entire Jewish people. And he says that even the miracles of the War of Independence, he contends, and we'll see those who say differently, but at least is similar to what some of us said, maybe didn't involve the entire Jewish people. So he says, "Lekan ein l'takin lomar halal gomar b'tocha tzvila afilo bli bracha." So he says we can't enact as a requirement to say halal within the tzvila, meaning halal after Shemone Esrei, after Chazaras Hashatz, where in Koma, where it normally is. He says even without a bracha, we can't say that that's a requirement. V'raksha efshar lomar mizmorei ha'halal achar siyum ha'tzvila. But he says that it's possible to allow saying halal is really chapters of Tehillim, to say those chapters of Tehillim after the end of davening without a bracha. But he says shim hakol rotzim lomar halal below bracha after tefillah shmona esrei ein limchos biyadam. But if the congregation wants to say halal after Shmona Esrei in its regular place without a bracha, he says ein limchos biyado, he shouldn't protest. So it sounds like Rav Avadia is saying not a requirement. According to his opinion, better to say it. He's not a requirement. He says we cannot make it with a bracha. According to him, better to say it after davening. But if you want to say it during davening without a bracha, he says we shouldn't protest. And that's similar to what Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik held with Hallel. Now, he's a very interesting person. He came from his family in general was very anti-Zionistic, the Brisk, and then Aguda, the non-Zionist orientation. Then he became a leading figure in the Mizrahi. And you now find it online, but his essays, his transcript of his speech is called Dodi Dofek on Yom HaTzvut in 1956 or 57, is unbelievably beautiful description and analysis of Hashem's hand and the establishment of the state of Israel and the value of it. So you can't accuse him, he's definitely not as much of a religious Zionist as one gets. In a particular, his brand of religious Zionism was a little bit different than Zerub Tzvi Yehuda Kook. We can maybe get to that another time, but he's very, as far as realizing the Yad Hashem, the hand of Hashem in the state of Israel, so he was certainly realized that. However, he was not so comfortable with saying Hallel on Yom HaTzmut, at least saying full Hallel. And in Nefesh HaRav, Rav Hershel Schechter is basically notes of some of Soloveitchik's teachings and practices. So he says, "Avila b'davar miris Hallel b'Yom HaTzmut, o b'Yom Yerushalayim, filu b'lo bracha, hayinu rabbeinu hasit." That Rav Soloveitchik was hesitant. Why? Because of the statement in the Gemara that we saw, that Kol Omer Hallel B'Kol Yom Harei Zem Necharef U'Megadev. Someone who says Hallel every day is like one who curses and blasphemes. He says, "Of Osam Hayomim Shenogul Omer Hallel B'Eino Medina," and on those days, and we see from this that we're very hesitant to add Hallel on any days other than those days that the Gemara tells us is required. And he says that's why we see on Rosh Chodesh and the last days of Pesach when we say Hallel, so we say full Hallel. No, we say chatzi halal, or halal bedigul, dibedilu. We skip some of it, and this is b'ktei shelo lavar hachi sura. Why do we do that? That was intentional, so that, and this is evident from a Gemara in Tainus, that if you skip the parts of halal, if you say half halal, so then you don't run into the problem of saying halal every day. That's not considered a full halal. That's why we do that on Rosh Chodesh and on the last days of Pesach. So, and he says here, there's not, similar to Rav Avadia Yosef, he says, again, there's a requirement from the absolute halakha to say halal these days. So he says that someone who wants to say halal, they should say chatzi halal and not full halal. So it's a chatzi halal without a bracha. And there's a question about what Rav Soloveitchik did himself. His brother Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was known to have said halal. That was his practice, to say half halal without a bracha. That's what they do, at least in the main minyan at YU. They say halal, they say after the davening, without a bracha. And that way, it's an acknowledgement of, it's a way to thank Hashem, right? We're saying Mizmore Tehillim, we're singing praises to Hashem, but avoids the concern of one saying the concern of saying Hallel every day by the half Hallel and not thinking of Bracha. No, Rav Avadia said, didn't think that the Hallel every day would be an issue with, he assumes that you would say full Hallel without a Bracha. Is the Hallel every day means you're saying it every day, not you say it one day where maybe it's not required. But Rav Soloveitchik was concerned for this, and he said that you should say half Hallel without a Bracha. So that explains the practice in many places. Some say Hallel without a Bracha, full Hallel without a Bracha, some within davening, some afterwards, and some places say half Hallel. So what's the reason for the half Hallel? That's basically the reason for the half Hallel. I know we're a little bit over time. We'd like 10 more minutes. I apologize. I don't want to. Okay. So that's Hallel without a Bracha. So it seems like, so for the Hallel without a Bracha approach, so it either comes from, we're unsure, you know, we want to thank Hashem, but we're unsure about the actual requirements. We want to avoid a product. We want, if there's a doubt about a Bracha, we want to avoid saying a Bracha and maybe even say Hallel after davening, not say the full Hallel. There were others who kind of came to Hallel without a Bracha from the other perspective, is they held, and we'll see the reasons, that you really should say Hallel with a Bracha. You should say full Hallel with a Bracha, but because there's lack of consensus, then, because you say, Asher Kishanu B'Mitzvosav B'Tzivanu, is lack of a, you understood the lack of consensus being a lack of a command to say Hallel. So there were those who contended that you should say Hallel with the Bracha, but in practice ruled that it should be said without a Bracha. One of them was Rav Meshulam Roth. Rav Meshulam Roth actually came from a Hasidic background. He was a great Torah scholar around the time that Israel was established. And so he actually addresses some of the concerns we saw in Rav Avadia Yosef. Rav Avadia Yosef came afterwards, but he speaks to those concerns. And he says that one, that everyone agrees that when a miracle occurs to all of Israel, so we need to say Hallel with a Bracha, without a doubt. So first he gets to, what about the fifth of Iyar? What about the fact that after the fifth of Iyar, there was a war? But he says, that the leaders who chose this day were correct. And I'll just read the English for the sake of time, because that's when the main miracle occurred. We went from bondage to freedom by declaring independence. Because who's to say that the declaring of independence itself wasn't miraculous? He said, had we postponed the declaration for a different day, we would have missed the opportunity and we would not have attained the recognition and the consent of the world's major powers, as is well known. Rav Soloveitchik said he's convinced the UN was created for no other reason and for agreeing to the establishment of the state of Israel. You had the U.S., you had the Soviet Union agreeing, so there was nations can change their mind. So it had the consent of the U.N., of the international community, but had they waited to declare, let's say they waited until the British left and the Arabs took control, then who knows if the international community would have given its consent. So that's why the date itself is significant. Sure, there were ups and downs afterwards, but that date, it was miraculous that we were able to declare the state of Israel then without losing the consent of the world's major powers. And as far as being safe from death, so the state of Israel was able to, once taken those refugees from Europe, and also throughout its history, was able to take in people who weren't safe in other parts of the world. So as far as addressing some of the concerns, okay, so what about all of Israel? So he says that this did affect all of Israel. And you can see that. Just take a look a couple of years before. The fact that there is now a state of Israel, in his view, would mean that perhaps all of the Jews in the world wouldn't be vulnerable to something like a Holocaust, because now there's a place for them to go. You can always say, what if, you know, we never know what alternatives could be. But he's saying, no, the fact that there's a state of Israel doesn't just affect those people who are in Israel. It affects all of world Jewry. And the date itself is significant because it was then that we took hold of the opportunity to declare the state of Israel while the world still was giving its consent. So he says that that based on that, you think it's correct to say Hal with the bracha. But he says, even though he's all that I've written seems to indicate that one should recite Hal with the bracha, he says, I'm not going to offer my views as a practical ruling unless the majority of great rabbis agree with my view. Because his, I don't want to lois go to lasos agudas agudas. I don't want to divide the Jewish people to factions, so I'm not going to offer this as a practical ruling. But he says, based on those factors, that it basically would, that the state of Israel didn't just affect those Jews who were there, but affected the Jews around the world, and the date was important that, that Hal should be said with a bracha. And this approach was shared by some of the chief rabbis, Rav Yitzhak Herzog, Ben Sion Uziel, the Ashkenazi and Sephardi chief rabbi, also outstanding Torah scholars, who also felt that Hal really should be said with a bracha. But the Chazon Ish, also a great Torah scholar, who was opposed to saying Hal on Yom HaTzmud because he was very opposed, so they refrained. His opinion was largely authoritative, and they refrained from offering that as a practical ruling. Later on, in large parts of the religious Zionist community, it became more common to say Hallel with a bracha. And Reuven Melamed gives some of the reasons. He says, in the one of the concerns was that the situation was a little bit precarious. Maybe it wasn't a full redemption. But he says later on, you see that then with the Six-Day War in 67, and even in 73, after some of the beginnings were a little bit unstable, overall, Israel has grown stronger. And in 1974, the chief rabbinate under Rabbi Shlomo Goren, who's the Ashkenazi chief rabbi, ruled to say Hallel with the bracha on Yom HaTzmut. And Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, who was the head of Merkaz HaRav, really the central religious Zionist yeshiva, up until that point hadn't said Hallel with the bracha. He also maintained that, that in principle one should, but because there wasn't a, because the chief rabbinate advised not to, so up until that point he didn't. But then once the chief rabbinate said to say Hallel with the bracha, so that became his practice as well. And that's the practice in many religious Zionist communities. And the reasons are as follows. One, in response to the claim that Hallel may be recited only on a miracle that affects all of Israel. So, say the establishment of the state of Israel constituted a salvation for all of Israel. And it brings as proof a Gemara in Horios that says that if this great Sanhedrin makes a ruling that in some cases it's that something prohibited is really permitted. They say a piece of fat is permitted or is really prohibited. And the majority of the Jews violate the Torah based on their ruling. So then they have to bring a par helam davar. They have to bring a certain sacrifice. So how do you calculate the majority of Jews? So the Gemara says you calculate the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Even if the majority of Jews lived outside of Eretz Yisrael for this purpose, for considering the majority of the nation, so you calculate the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Goren used that as a basis to say that any miracles that happen in Israel really do are considered to have affected the majority of the Jewish people because we consider the majority those living in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yosef and others take issue with that. They say that doesn't necessarily apply in all areas of the Torah. But those are the basic arguments. Just one thing to note with the realm of saying about a full redemption. So we see that there is something to be said about having sovereignty. Not a full redemption, full release from subjugation. That having sovereignty is at least arguably fits that bill. So there are, I think what emerges from here is that the issue is not so simple even among those who fully recognize the value of the state of Israel and are thankful to Hashem for the state of Israel. But there are many factors to consider. And you know, and within those who view the state of Israel very positively, there are different approaches. And I would say I don't think they should be considered necessarily a barometer for how much one appreciates the state of Israel. You see, the issues are complex. But I think two important takeaways are as follows. That one, I've actually haven't heard this from anyone else, but I thought this, that I don't know if it's no accident that the 5th of Iyar falls in the period of Sfiras HaOmer, when we observe mourning practices for the fact that Rabbi Akiva's students were at Nagu Kavod Zelazet. They were all great Torah scholars, but apparently didn't give each other the respect that was appropriate. And maybe it's Hashem made it so that the state of Israel was established during this time, and we'd have these questions in order to hopefully go beyond that, to realize there are different approaches even among Torah scholars, to give be nagu kavod zevazet, to give honor to other Torah scholars, to realize that their intentions are pure and their motives are sincere, and you know, to realize that the issues involve complexity, and also to whatever one does specifically, whether they include challah with a bracha, without a bracha, you have to recognize that Hashem is deeply involved in the world. And all you have to look at is the founding of the state of Israel and the events of the last 73 years to clearly see that. And whatever the specific response is, okay, we have to figure out, and there could be different approaches. But what's definitely true without a doubt is we have to respond in some way, whether it's thanking Hashem, whether it's just knowledge, acknowledging and living our lives with recognition that Hashem is there, Hashem is involved, and use the opportunity of having Medinas Yisrael in a positive way. And I'll conclude with Rav Avadya Yosef in his tshuva. I'll conclude with his words. He says, "Hashem Yisbrach Yakish Gula Se Legleinu Gula Shlema," that Hashem should accelerate the complete redemption, where we'll experience everlasting relief from our enemies and express our gratitude to God's pidyon nafshenu b'mehirah v'yameinu b'shir chadash. So hopefully we should be able to experience the full redemption, have a full relief from all our enemies, and be able to enjoy Eretz Yisrael in the fullest way, Moshiach in the Beis HaMikdash, and all these issues will be resolved.